Man Up, a program dedicated to inspiring and helping men live lives of heroic virtue. And now, it's time to man up.
Welcome to Man Up on Iowa Catholic Radio. We are broadcasting on the Iowa Catholic Radio Network. I am Joe Stopulis, and today we start the series on the virtues. I'm joined today by Dr. Christian Miller from Wake Forest University, and we are going to discuss an overview of the four cardinal virtues. Let us start in prayer in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and the snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world, seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. In the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen. So, if you're a long-time listener to the show, you know that I've talked about the idea of doing something like this for a while, the idea of having a series on the virtues. I probably started studying them 5-6 years ago, something like that. And I had this better understanding of how the virtues work in my own life, and it was really helpful to set context around how to become a better man in the context of the virtues. And I've wanted to for a long time to do something like this. So what happens? It's here. We did it. It's starting today. So I'll have Dr. Miller on today to discuss the overview. So we're going to today discuss and dive into a high-level sketch of what these virtues look like and how they work together. And then in the subsequent 4 weeks, we'll actually dive deeper into each one, into prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, and how they work in your life. So we are headed to a short break, and when we return, we'll have on Dr. Christian Miller to discuss an overview of the cardinal virtues.
Iowa Catholic Radio would like to thank our business partner, Pickerman Soup and Sandwiches, open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Box lunches and catering platters are available at 6750 Westtown Parkway in West Des Moines. Pickermansdeli.com.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio is provided by Construction Professionals. Construction Professionals does remodeling and new construction. Construction Professionals is a Catholic family business built on a strong foundation. CPCustomHomes.com. Thank you, Construction Professionals, for supporting Iowa Catholic Radio. Support for Iowa Catholic Radio comes from Mercy One, your expert circle of personalized care for all your health needs. With more care locations than anyone, your best life is their one purpose. Find your doctor at mercyone.org.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio is provided by InterVisions Healthcare, empowering men and women to make the most informed, life-affirming decisions for themselves and their families. Learn more at ivhcare.org, ivhcare.org. Thank you, InterVisions Healthcare, for supporting Iowa Catholic Radio.
Welcome back to Man Up on Iowa Catholic Radio. Excited today to be joined by Professor Miller. Professor Christian Miller is a professor of philosophy at Wake Forest University, which is actually my brother's alma mater. We'll probably need to talk about that at some point. Also the author of the book, The Character Gap, How Good Are We? And he's here to join me today as an introduction. I have talked about this ad nauseum. I've never actually finally doing it, which is an introduction to the virtues. This all-encompassing framework that so many of the great minds in history have used to talk about how to become habitually good. And I think it's important for us to understand that. So, Professor Miller, welcome to the Man Up Show.
It's great to be with you today. Thanks so much.
So, yeah, you and I have exchanged some emails. We were introduced by a good friend of ours up at Iowa State, who's a professor up there. And now we're going to just dive into it. Again, as I told you in the framework and I told our listeners, really what I'm trying to do today is to help us understand the virtues at maybe a 15,000 foot view. And then in subsequent episodes, I can maybe dive deeper into them. But I was first introduced to the virtues, the cardinal virtues specifically, probably, you know, maybe 4 years ago. And in that, it really helped me to understand what the virtues are and then how to grow in virtue. So I think if we have a good understanding of how they work, it will help us to become more virtuous people. So that is the end goal. So no pressure on you to help everyone here become more virtuous. I think you can do it. But let's kind of start with the history of the virtues. So we have this framework, and I'm curious on the history of how they came to be.
Sure. So there's a long history to tell here. I'll keep it short. There's also a Western and an Eastern version. So the virtues are not unique to Western philosophy. There's a long tradition, say, in Confucian thinking. But focusing on the West, we can go all the way back to ancient Greece. So Plato and Socrates, They talked about the virtues. They gave us the framework of the cardinal virtues. You can find it in Plato's Republic. It's developed, the whole thinking about virtue is developed even more systematically in Aristotle's work with the Nicomachean Ethics. He tells us about individual virtues. He tells about virtues in general, how that links to our human flourishing, how it links to a good society. And then there are many luminaries along the way. Another one, of course, who really stands out is Aquinas. In the Summa Theologica, he devotes extensive attention to individual virtues, and he is very indebted to that ancient Greek discussion, in particular to Aristotle, but he enriches it even more with a Christian framework that involves not only additional virtues, like a theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity, but also talking about different sources of virtues. So whether virtues come from human beings or whether they might come from God. So he adds additional nuance, not surprisingly, from a Christian perspective. Fast forwarding up to today, well, we're going to skip over many people, but I'll just note as a final word that in the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a virtue revolution in academic work, and it's trickling down, I think, into culture at large. There's been a great deal of emphasis and excitement about the virtues. Some leading philosophers and theologians who have been responsible for that include people like Alistair MacIntyre, Philippa Foot, Elizabeth Anscombe. It's trying to get us to pay attention to an earlier tradition instead of inventing things brand new. They're saying, go back to the beginning. People like Plato and Aristotle and then Aquinas, actually, we're getting a lot of things right, and we need to pay attention to it again.
Yeah, good. Well, I think for me, when I was being introduced to them, and I'll give you this, my framework, a lot of it comes from Joseph Pieper's book, The Four Cardinal Virtues, which was that was probably recommended me 4 years ago or something. And, you know, I'm interested on the genesis of those four, right? So we're talking specifically about prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. How did those become the four that everyone kind of just either agreed upon or they became the cardinal virtues? How did that even happen?
I'm not a historian, so I don't want to claim a lot of weight to this. One way to think about it is for someone like Plato, he was trying to think about different parts of our lives and trying to attach a virtue to different parts. So like the more intellectual part of our lives, that's where something like prudence would have a role to play. The more passionate part of our lives, that's where temperance might have a role to play. So if you think about it that way, our lives are multifaceted. There are different domains of our lives, different things we do. And you want to have a virtue governing each of those that's going to keep us on the right track, keep us from going astray. So Plato had this idea of different parts of the soul. We might not talk about that the same way today, but it's getting at this idea that different parts of our lives, a virtue can pertain to each.
Yeah, very good. Well, when we look at what the framework they came up with, they being apparently many people over many years kind of agreeing upon this, as this laid out, prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance are the four cardinal virtues. And so I'd love for you to maybe expound upon each of them maybe briefly and help us to have a thumbnail sketch of what it looks like, maybe. So maybe a definition of it, and then maybe how it looks in real life.
Sure. So, and I'll note this will be brief because you're going to have guests who are going to go on and expand a lot more detail. Let's start with prudence. That's often considered the highest virtue. It has to do with figuring out the right thing to do in specific situations. So we have an ultimate goal in mind, but then we still, in our daily lives, we have to figure out, okay, in this situation, what's the right thing to do? In this situation, what's the right thing to do? In this situation, what's the right thing to do? And that's a very hard matter. It's a very difficult task that's put in front of us. And so the virtue of prudence, an intellectual virtue, is helping us guide the best means towards living a good life in specific situations. Let's go to another one, temperance. Temperance is going to have to do with our passions and our desires. And it's going to help us moderate them, and so they don't get out of control. The most common examples would be eating, pleasures associated with eating, pleasures associated with drinking, pleasures associated with sex. But it could be any part of our life where there's pleasure associated with it. And it's a virtue that's not trying to eliminate pleasure. That would be really a shame. That would be a vice, in fact, I think. It's rather, no, it's not doing that. It's trying to keep the pleasure moderated and in check. Let's go to the a third one, fortitude. That's a word that we don't hear very much today. It's kind of an archaic word. I think maybe some listeners, maybe your listeners are up to speed on it, but I think a lot of my
listeners are very, very smart. These people talk about fortitude in regular speech.
but in ordinary interactions that I have, I don't think you come across that too much. But the basic idea, I think it's familiar, which is overcoming your fears on worthwhile matters. So it pertains to our emotional life, and in particular, the fear part of our emotional life. And it's saying, look, there are things that are worthwhile in life that we will not pursue if we give in to fear. And so it works against that fear. You might want to say it's courage, but the word has typically been fortitude and not courage. But I think courage gets at it as well. So where that short term, but it's often long term is what our focus is here. So not giving up on a relationship, not giving up on a project, not giving up on a job merely out of apprehension or anxiety or fear, and being committed to it, dedicated to it, and seeing it through to the end when it's worthwhile.
As I say, so that you hit that last, my question, I think you might have answered that last on that last bit of it. It does it have to be tied to something that's noble? I mean, is that part of what fortitude is, or can I have fortitude in a bad direction? I mean, I guess I'm trying to wonder.
Yeah. So a great question. You cannot, if we're talking about a virtue here, I mean, okay. You certainly, you can in an ordinary sense. But if we're talking about virtue, it always has to be oriented towards the noble. And again, that's kind of old fashioned language, towards the good, towards the right.
So if I'm trying to eat an entire large, like 16 inch pizza like that, and having the fortitude to stick with that goal, that's not necessarily a virtuous thing because of the nature of the what we're talking
project.
About.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's right. Yeah. That makes sense. Good illustration.
Okay. Good.
And then the last one is justice. This is certainly a word we're familiar with and we use all the time. Here we're talking about a virtue, though. We often talk about like a just society or a just law or just policy, but this is starting here with a just person. But it's still, I think, getting at the same idea, which ultimately has to do with giving people what is their due. And that's how Aquinas would have defined it. It's making sure people get what they're due. Now, there are different types of justice. There's distributive justice. There are other kinds. But I think a couple examples probably are more helpful. So if two people do equal work, they should be paid an equal salary for their work. It would be unjust to pay people who'd made the same contribution a dissimilar wage. Similarly, for the same product, it would be unjust to charge two people different prices because one's wealthy and one's poor, to exploit the difference in their economic status. So these are two different kinds of illustrations of failures of justice. The justice itself is giving people what they are ultimately due. That's the core of that virtue. So those are four virtues. I'll say, by way of wrapping it up, those are not the only virtues. These are the cardinal virtues. These are kind of categories for virtues, but we should not fall into the trap of thinking, aha, this is all there is. There are many others like honesty, for example, which we could categorize under these four, but that's not all there is.
Like honesty would fall under justice in some way, shape, or form, right? So it's so like, okay, and then the virtue of magnanimity, where does that fall into this? Is that kind of an overarching kind of combination of all of them? And do I dare do an entire episode on that? Where do we go with that?
How do you, I'll put the spot back on you for a second. How do you understand that?
So to me, someone who's magnanimous is someone who's habituated the virtues. It's someone a magnanimous person is a virtuous person in general. I could be way off on that. That's how I see it.
Yeah. So that's why I asked the question, because there are different ways of understanding it. Aristotle had a notion of someone who's kind of thinks of themselves as making large donations to others. The magnanimous person is someone who makes big donations to others. That's a very, very specialized and unique understanding of that virtue. If you're just understanding it the way you are, so a virtuous person in general, or has the virtues in general, I don't think then that's worthy of a special label or a special concept or a special episode. Okay. That's just virtuous.
So let's go back, maybe even more of a meta what is a virtue? What is a vice? Let's even bring it back further. Then let's talk just theoretically. What are those two things? What are
Good. So a virtue in general is a disposition or a habit in my psychology. It's important to note that it's not just a matter of outward behavior. A virtue gives rise to outward behavior, but it's not just exhaustively defined in terms of that. So to take an example, let's do honesty. Honesty, an honest person, that's how they are psychologically disposed. They're disposed to think in honest ways, to have honest motivations and feelings. And then those two things, the thinking and the feelings, give rise outwardly to honest behavior. So it's a matter of thinking, it's a matter of feeling, and it's a matter of behavior, where the behavior is an expression of the thinking, the feeling. Now, it has to be ultimately oriented in the right way, though. So I haven't said anything about whether it's good or bad. It's got to be good thinking, it's got to be good feeling, appropriate motivation, appropriate thinking, giving expression to appropriate behavior. Well, what happens with the vice is that the vice just inverts the whole thing. It just flips it around. It also has to do with psychology. It also has to do with thinking. It also has to do with feeling. It also has to do with behavior, but it's oriented in a bad direction, the wrong direction. So a dishonest person is going to be pursuing, say, self-benefits by lying, cheating, stealing, and so forth. And that's what's going to be motivating them. That's going to be, they're thinking about that a lot, and that's what their behavior is going to be. So that's all oriented towards benefiting themselves, not in a good way. So that's my overall sketch of virtue and a vice.
Do you think people are generally predisposed to one or the other? I mean, is that obviously nature versus nurture in some capacity, but just in general, how are people predisposed?
Yeah. So there's how they are kind of born and early on, and then how people are in general in society once they're adults. There does seem to be a genetic component to this. So that's interesting to note that someone like Aristotle or Aquinas would not have been aware of. But it does seem like some people are higher in empathy than others, for example, or some people are higher on fairness than others. But no, at no point are we going to get into the realm of virtue until we get to the point of talking about free will and responsibility. So there might be some initial advantages or disadvantages people have, but they don't become, I would not say they're more virtuous until later on in life, where they can make choices for themselves, they can think in moral categories and distinguish between right and wrong. Now, when we get to adults, I think here we're going to have to look more systematically at the population and say, on the basis of empirical research and psychology or other sources like that, how are we doing today? And to cut the story really short, and we can go in detail if you want, I say the empirical story that emerges from psychology today is one of lack of virtue. That most people are not virtuous, but most people are not vicious either. Most of us are a mixed bag. We're in between virtue and vice, where we have some good sides to our character, but also some bad sides to our character. So
would you say that's trended one way or the other in the last 100 years?
I can only say that speculatively, because I would really want the empirical data to show me the answer, and we don't have the data that tracks that. So if you just understand that I'm speculating, I think it's likely that in the last, say, 50 years, we've gone down in character.
I was going to say, my grandfather was a very virtuous man. I'm less virtuous than he is. So there's your empirical data.
but your children, will buck the trend. They'll reverse it. I think it's especially with things like social media and the internet and technology, I don't see those as, by and large, enhancing virtue. There might be some ways in which they do, but I think that there are some real detractors.
We're good at virtue signaling. Does that count for anything?
Well, we are good at that because we see that's beneficial. But that's self-interested. I mean, we're making a good impression on others. We're trying to signal our virtue so that we reap social benefits.
One of the things that to me is, and that's why I'm excited about hopefully getting the series launched and recorded, because as I came to the realization that a virtuous person is someone who has habituated the virtues, that means that we have the opportunity to become virtuous if we strive to do so. Correct? I mean, so how can I, as a person today, now having this framework of prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, grow to become a virtuous person?
Yeah, and that's a long story. And there's a secular component to it and a religious component to it. The secular component is something like this. There are strategies we can adopt in our lives to help us on that path. I would highlight things like good role models and exemplars and moral saints and heroes who we can follow because they've done it. And so we can see their lives and have them inspire us to become more like them. I would also call attention to having moral reminders in our lives to help us keep our focus where it needs to be and not get distracted by self-interest, by, say, social media and the like. Reminders like reading the Bible or other religious texts or other kinds of texts every day, having notes and text messages and signs and so forth, keeping us our focus where it needs to be. There's one last wrinkle to this, though, that I'll mention here, which is from a Christian perspective, it's not a matter just of what I can do to fix myself, because that's only going to take me so far. And human beings do normally do a bad job of trying to fix things. It's me in community with others, with the church, with a body of believers. And it's also what God can do in me to help me grow in virtue. So it's me individually, it's me in community, and it's the divine working too, thankfully, because that's a big help.
Yeah, that's a very large help. And I think your first point was well taken. I actually used it. So I was giving a talk to a group of confirmation students. So you're like freshmen going into sophomore year of high school. And I was kind of using this framework of virtue, which probably went way over their heads. But to talk about the idea of authentic masculinity, what does a man look like? I said, try to just put in your mind who a virtuous person is and try to live like them. Right. I use George Washington a lot as an example. Like, here's a guy who was, he was a man's man. He was a leader. He was selfless. He was prudent. He was just, he had fortitude. I'm like, okay, that's one example that I like to use in my own mind. But I think the Catholic Church is super lucky because we got all the saints. So you can look at them and try to model their lives, which is one of the reasons with confirmation students, we tell them, hey, choose a saint to model and try to have a relationship with. I think that's really important because, again, we do it in sports, right? So we watch sports figures all the time. We try to mimic them as in whatnot, musicians. But how much more important is it in the virtuous life to find someone to look up to?
Right. Absolutely. And I'll just give you a little wrinkle to think about there. So there's empirical work on the effectiveness of these exemplars. And one thing that seems to show up again and again is the more relatable the exemplar is, the more of an impact. And the more of an emotional connection you can make, which is related to relatability. So sometimes really historical exemplars are not as effective because they don't seem to speak to my situation here in America today.
Yeah.
And also some really perfect exemplars, really excellent exemplars can be discouraging because they're so above me.
Yeah.
So sometimes you might want to throw in examples of contemporary people, mm-hmm. local people in your life too.
Yeah,
that you can really make that connection.
My grandfather might be a little more attainable than George Washington.
That's right. That's right.
Thomas Aquinas or something like that.
That's a good way to put it.
I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. This is the perfect introduction to the virtues. So, Professor Miller, I appreciate you joining on the Man Up Show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Awesome. We're going to stick around and head to a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where you can chart your course for more.
Mercy College provides unparalleled clinical rotations, hands-on learning, accelerated education, and flexible schedules. Since 1899, Mercy College has been transforming students into healthcare professionals. Guided by Catholic values, our faculty put classroom theory into practice. Students are prepared for roles in service and leadership throughout their own careers.
Learn more at mchs.edu. Mercy College of Health Sciences, mchs.edu.
The Catholic Morning Show.
Deacon Randy Keel, you say that we desire change, but desire isn't enough.
Change is not easy. Change even stirs some level of anxiety inside of us. Part of our mind that has our defense mechanisms, it will talk us out of change. If we make the plan for our personal interior change after the decision, we will find the plan is able to be accomplished far more than if we make the plan first before the decision.
The Catholic Morning Show, weekdays at 7, only on the Iowa Catholic Radio Network.
My help comes from you.
Welcome back to Man Up on Iowa Catholic Radio. Professor Miller has been gracious enough to stick around because I did not get an opportunity to ask him my question that I always like to ask at the end of the show on something like this, which is, what are your book recommendations? So let's jump into it. Obviously, a lot to cover here. We have thousands of years of writings. if someone wanted to learn more about the virtues, where would you point them to?
Well, if they want to go historical, there's no better source than the classics. So Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, Aquinas' Summa Theologica.
My listeners are not into the Summa. I don't think we're the Summa of the Summa by Peter Kraft is a good a good recommendation, but that's I wouldn't start with the actual Summa.
I completely understand. So let's go contemporary. You've already mentioned the four virtues, cardinal virtues by Pieper. Let me mention two other books. One is Glittering Vices by Rebecca de Young. Glittering Vices by Rebecca de Young. It's a very thoughtful examination of a variety of vices, but with also a goal of illuminating virtue in the process. So I teach this book. I can't recommend it enough. And then the last one I'll recommend, and this is a little self-serving. It's my own book called The Character Gap. The idea there was it's a non-academic book. It's meant to be widely accessible. It first starts by saying, what is virtue? Talks about why virtue is important. Why should we care about this? It goes through some empirical literature. How good are we? Can we, are most of us virtuous? Are most of us vicious? Looking at research and psychology. And then it ends by saying, here are some strategies for growing in virtue that you can use if you're religious or not. The final chapter talks about growing in virtue from a Christian perspective. So it tries to cover, I think, the range of issues in a hopefully in an accessible way.
Awesome. And where can I get The Character Gap?
All the usual places. You can go to Amazon. You can go to any bookseller online. And it's published by Oxford University Press. Came out in 2017.
Awesome. So if I hate Amazon, there are other places to get it. Is that what you're saying?
That absolutely. It's anywhere that books are sold.
Awesome. So Joseph Pieper's The Four Virtues, Glittering Vices by Rebecca de Young, and then your book, The Character Gap. Again, Christian Miller, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for listening to Man Up on Iowa Catholic Radio. I am Joe Stopulis. It's time to Man Up.
Man Up, inspiring men to live out their call to holiness.